Huawei's sneak attack tears a hole in U.S. sanctions on China. The telecom giant's new Mate 60 phone is a sign Washington's chip tech restrictions are not working. This is practical proof that necessity is the mother of invention. So it's reported recently, Huawei's Mate 60 smartphone rolled out to great acclaim with no advertising campaign or advance notice. On the 30th of August, Reuters reported that the company's stock rallied due to the surprise hit of the phone with what is being described as unusually high specs, including satellite call capabilities and super high speeds. Brian, back in 2019, China landed a vehicle on the far side of the moon for the first time in history, and that's the part, for those who don't know, that's the part of the moon that perpetually faces away from the Earth. And the probe was able to send back to Earth the first close-up images of the moon's far side using a relay satellite that China calls Kuikuyo, or Magpie Bridge. We said then, back in 2019, that China... That this was going to be a earth-shattering development in terms of communication, and now they are putting satellite call capabilities into cellular telephones. Your thoughts on all of this, Brian Berletic?
I think it shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody that Huawei made this development. The other major news about this phone was the fact that it's believed all of the microchips, the semiconductors inside of it, were manufactured in China, despite U.S. sanctions on China attempting to prevent it from creating more modern 7-nanometer microchips. So this was supposed to freeze China, its technological progress, and yet China continued to progress. And it was predictable because if you look at China's industrial base, it dwarfs the United States, not just in size, but also in capabilities. And a point that I have always tried to remind people of is the fact that China graduates millions more in STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, millions more every single year than the United States. Whatever deficiencies they have, they will catch up on, and eventually they will surpass the U.S. So this attempt to artificially arrest Chinese technological progress is a failure in the making, and I think this latest smartphone proves that.
The other thing is, you know, there's a discussion, and that is, can the U.S., and of all horrifying things, take on China militarily before China gets too powerful? Can the U.S. arrest and retard the growth of the technology field in China before they get surpassed? And I think the answer is coming out with both of those things. It's too late. China is far too powerful economically, technologically, and militarily, because China does not have to project its military power halfway across the world. It only has to defend its own borders. And for the U.S. to go 7,000 miles across the ocean and attack a country with that level of military, economic, and technological power is basically suicide. And hopefully they're not suicide for everyone. But my point being, it's too late. Your thoughts?
Yes, that is. That's the question everyone is asking. Is there a closing window of opportunity for the U.S. to somehow contain China? And as you're pointing out, many people believe, as I do, that window has already closed. And you have to wonder what this policy in Washington stems from anyway. Is it a rational policy to attempt to encircle and contain China, or is this irrational? This is a nation, the United States, a part of the collective West that has held hegemony over the planet for so long, and they just feel that they're entitled to continue doing so no matter what the realities actually are. And when you look at the people who constitute the current administration or any administration in the United States in recent decades, these are people who have backgrounds as career politicians or as lawyers. And then when you look at the Chinese government, these are all engineers and scientists and people who have worked real jobs in their life. They are more grounded in reality, and the respective foreign policies reflect that.
Continent USA has a piece by John Bacon, Ukraine in Deep Trouble. Some experts say $1 billion more from U.S. won't matter. And Stephen Myers, an Air Force veteran, State Department advisory panel member and Russia expert, says the Biden administration, quote unquote, party line is that Ukraine is winning and that Russia must yield to the West or become a vassal of China. Myers says new Ukraine defense minister Umarov, a Blinken pat on the back, and the latest aid package won't dramatically alter Ukraine's struggle against its far bigger neighbor. There's no effective counter strategy available to Ukrainians, Myers says. The Ukrainians are in deep trouble. Brian Berletic, you know, they say the first thing you got to do when you find yourself in a hole is stop digging. And Blinken et al. Don't seem to understand that. Brian Berletic.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. $1 billion isn't going to make a difference. $100 billion additional dollars is not going to make any difference, because all the money in the world cannot buy weapons and ammunition that does not exist, that the West's industrial base is incapable of producing in the amount of time Ukraine would need it in. And the same goes for training Ukraine's depleted manpower. These are the fundamentals of waging war that the West has ignored from the very beginning of this conflict up to and including now. And some people are starting to come to grips with that, but others are trying to paper over it with exactly this: trips to Kiev, additional aid packages. None of this is going to make a difference. And in many ways, they're not even going to be able to kick the can down the road any further by doing this.
Just really quickly, Brian, you're right. $1 billion won't make a bit of difference in Ukraine, but $1 billion would make a hell of a lot of difference in the American housing crisis, in the American homelessness crisis, in the American food availability crisis. $1 billion back into the U.S. budget focused on social programs helping the least of us in this country would make a huge difference. Garnet.
Here's the other thing, too, when you talk about, hey, another $1 billion, but it won't make a difference. It's actually an accurate metaphor for the overall conflict, you know, between the financialized U.S. empire. Everything's about money. We make money by coming up with, you know, magical tools on Wall Street for financialization versus, say, the Russia, China, the more industrialized nations. Industry makes artillery. So the U.S. says, we'll send you money. And Russia says, we'll fire artillery. I'm going to bet on artillery over money every time. So it's a metaphor for the actual overall kind of conflict between the financialized U.S. empire and the industrialized world. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. It's a wake-up call to people who actually really did believe that U.S. financial power trumped all else. It obviously and clearly doesn't. We always hear about how large the U.S. defense budget is compared to Russia, and how could Russia compare to the United States? Look at the U.S. GDP or the GDP of the collective G7. How can Russia compete against the combined power of all these nations working together to support Ukraine? Well, we can see how, by emphasizing industry over financial tricks, just as you were talking about.
According to RT, Russia warns of new crisis in Korea. The foreign ministry cited a recent increase in military activity by the U.S. and its allies, South Korea and Japan, in the region. The Korean Peninsula could soon descend into a new crisis, Russia's foreign minister has warned. Brian, as if the world isn't in enough harm and isn't looking towards an incredibly, incredibly militaristic, dismal future. And now they just want to seem to add insult to injury. And so at what point do those in the Pentagon tell the president, you can't fight the entire world at one time? Brian Berletic.
Yes, it's true, but they're going to try anyway. And the important thing to understand about this news story about The potential for increased tensions, possible conflict on the Korean Peninsula is you have to look at a map at where South Korea and Japan are, look at the map where the Philippines are, where the U.S. is gaining a military foothold, and understand that while the U.S. is fighting a proxy war against Russia and Ukraine, they are also preparing for a military conflict against China. And they're doing it by attempting to encircle and contain it with its military presence in the Asian Pacific region. And the Korean Peninsula is just one of several areas. And they talk about South Korea and Japan as if they had any say in the matter, when in fact, both of these countries are occupied by tens of thousands of U.S. troops. Their political systems are captured by Washington. Their foreign policy is determined by Washington for Washington's interests at the expense of both South Korea and Japan's own interests.
NATO, steadfast defenders, drills near Russia's signal, blocks a shift to war footing. But even when you look at the number of troops, 41,000 troops, in comparison to what they would need to attack Russia on its border, that's still not nearly the combat capacity that they would need for that war. But it could, you know, of course, lead directly into some kind of a nuclear conflict. But your thoughts on NATO's drills near the Russian border?
It's posturing. This is NATO attempting to look strong when, as we previously discussed, it is fundamentally weak. And there is nothing that NATO collectively can do in the short or even intermediate term to fix these fundamental flaws that they have. Their military industrial output simply is not on any level to fight a nation like Russia or China, let alone both of these countries combined. And yet that does appear to be what NATO, the United States, is trying to do, leading NATO along with it. And it just doesn't come across as a credible threat. Now, we see these drills, and you have to ask yourself, why are they doing this? It's because they don't have a reverse gear. They cannot accept that this proxy war in Ukraine is failing. They cannot accept that China is surpassing them despite all of these efforts, including the sanctions they thought would cripple or arrest Chinese technological progress. And so they're resorting to posturing. But I just wonder who this is fooling, except perhaps themselves.
And we have just about a minute left. Is also a part of this calculus the fact that the United States just doesn't believe that Xi is serious, that Putin is serious, that Kim Jong-un is serious, that when these folks say you better stop or you're going to get pounded, the United States, in its arrogance, just doesn't believe that these world leaders will do what they say they'll do?
I think that is part of it. I think they thought they could provoke, encircle, and put pressure on Russia, and Russia simply wouldn't do anything back until the special military operation unfolded. And I think they believe the same in regards to China. They can continue encroaching on China, even within Chinese territory, militarily, and they believe that China will not do anything back. And they'll continue doing that until China proves otherwise. Unfortunately, it'll lead to a very similar conflict to what we're seeing in Ukraine. If somebody in Washington or in London or in Brussels doesn't wake up and get in touch with reality.